whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan, joining us now to talk about the college football playoffs, the world of football in general. It's Mike Golic Jr. here with you on your home of the Cowboys. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm doing well. How you guys doing?
We're doing outstanding. Now, as a Notre Dame alumni, former player, how are you feeling here as we approach kickoff tonight?
Incredibly stressed. A lifetime of being a Notre Dame fan means never being allowed to be comfortable or have complete faith in your team, because you have either, in the case of most fans, been hurt, or in my case as a former player, hurt the fan base before in plenty of instances like this. So I am stress eating currently.
What are you
stress
eating?
Well, I am trying to manage the like healthy stress eating. So I went to Mendocino Farms. I live in Los Angeles now, guys, so I'm taking care of my body. New year, new me. All that good stuff. So nothing really good yet, unfortunately.
Now, speaking of Los Angeles, aren't you somewhat close to the coast?
Yeah, thankfully I am. I'm down near the water and well south of everything that's been going on in terms of the wildfires here. But listen, certainly a chaotic couple of days. I know the Rams and the NFL just put out the statement, you know, exploring their options about what to do in case that Los Angeles and SoFi aren't fit to host a game come Monday between, you know, the Rams and the Vikings. And you know, you're talking about a team trying to get ready and prepare for a playoff game while their families, the community they live in, are all dealing with what's gone on here the last, you know, 48 hours, which has been, guys, quite unlike anything I've ever seen. I mean, I didn't grow up out here, so I certainly haven't been exposed to this before, but just the level of devastation and the helplessness you kind of feel right now is pretty insane.
Yeah, I can imagine. Some of the video has just been surreal. Not a lot going right there in L.A., but a lot has gone right for your Irish. You know, what have been the most important developments this year to find themselves in this position after a season where some people were still doubting them?
Yeah, well, I think going all the way back to before the season, it was the depth that this roster had recruited at so many positions across the board. I think back in my Notre Dame lifetime, and one of the things that was always most difficult, well, really two of the things, one was certainly just championship-level depth in general across the board. You look at so many positions this year that were impacted by injury, the offensive line before and at the beginning of the season, the defense really the entirety of the year, and the amount of young players that have been ready to is tough, and that's one of the things that I think this team has done incredibly well, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Gojo, I wanted to ask you about the quarterback situation. Riley Leonard, who was great with his legs, they didn't throw for a ton of yards. What are your expectations for him against an outstanding Penn State defense, although Abdul Carter is a game-time decision for this?
Yeah, and that's going to go a long way, right? Because you know in your game plan for Mike Denbrock, Notre Dame's offensive coordinator, it's, hey, you got to account for 11 every single play in Abdul Carter if he's out there. And so if he's compromised, if he gets banged up during that game, I'm sure you're going to see the offensive game plan shift to reflect that. But, you know, Notre Dame has really been a team, I think, designed to try and help mitigate that all year long with Riley Leonard's legs. You guys know a quarterback that can take off and run and do so as effectively as him, where, hell, I'd argue Riley Leonard is the chief threat in the Notre Dame run game while Jeremiah Love is banged up, their all-world running back. And so having him, especially for guys on the edges, to hold it in a zone read, to scramble in the passing game as effectively as he does, can just make these guys stop and think. That's all you're really trying to do with pass rushers as potent as Abdul Carter and the rest of this group, is stop them, make them think a little bit as they're on their way to the quarterback. And so that's going to be huge. But Riley Leonard, Notre Dame in this passing attack, I mean, they have been as needed, but not an every down staple, right? Jordan Faison, the Notre Dame lacrosse star turned wide receiver, has been probably their most consistent receiving threat. I would say Mitchell Evans on his best day, their tight end, is a guy who's been dependable for the last couple of seasons for the Irish. And so it's been spot duty for that passing game. But we saw against Georgia, they broke that out on some early downs when they needed to create space against that defense that was suffocating at times. And I have a feeling that's going to have to be more of the case against Penn State as well.
What about the coaching chess match here between Freeman and Franklin? I think Franklin's got a lot of pressure on him.
I think he does, because, I mean, listen, for Notre Dame, they get a lot of credit coming off that Sugar Bowl. You listen to pundits and everyone around the sport, Notre Dame breaking that, you know, almost three-decade drought of success in major bowl games, 0-8 in the BCS and New Year's Six games until that one. That win, even though it was against a backup quarterback, gave them a lot of, you know, capital in a lot of people's mind. And for James Franklin, I think he's still searching for that. I don't think the wins against SMU and Boise State resonated in the same way that they would like, and certainly in the way that this Notre Dame game would as a win. And so, listen, I know I'm a Notre Dame fan, and so everything gets filtered through the lens, but I think Marcus Freeman has acquitted himself incredibly well in terms of the in-game coaching prowess this season. More fourth down attempts this year than in his first two seasons combined. You've got some high leverage moves in special teams and in some of the hidden yardage situations that have popped up where Marcus Freeman hasn't been afraid to push the gas pedal down in critical situations. And so he understands, hey, with this offense, we got to steal possessions. The defense is going to do some of that, but I've got to manufacture the rest of the head coach, and he's been up to that challenge.
Here in Dallas, all we've been doing is talking about coaches and what's going on with Mike McCarthy, but it seems like Freeman's getting some buzz even in the NFL. What do you think about that? Are you nervous that maybe he leaves?
Not at this point. I mean, just announced the extension before the first round game against Indiana. So you've got some of that financial incentive there. Pete Bavakwa, the athletic director, made it clear there are no carve outs here for his alma mater in Ohio State back when people were wondering if Ryan Day's job was secure or not, which, man, feels like an eternity ago based on the way Ohio State's played. But also with the Bears jobs, you know, getting thrown out there. I remember Peter Schrager had been the one reporting that Chicago had some interest in Marcus Freeman, which, you know, seemed like as much gamesmanship from Marcus Freeman and his camp trying to make sure that pen got put to paper on the deal. But I'm sure the interest is legitimate. You know, talking to people, that game management is something that NFL, regardless of the differences between college and pro, is what people are looking for. Someone that could come in and manage all the things that come with being the head coach, and knowing that at the NFL level, you'd have even less to worry about in the ways of recruiting and all the different avenues that are you're responsible for in the college game right now. So I'm not surprised, but I also don't think at this point in Marcus Freeman's coaching life cycle that he's going anywhere right now. He seems very comfortable in South Bend. He really seems confident in what they're building in this program. And I think at least for right now, he wants to see it through while they're close to doing some great things there.
Mike, you know, I've started looking at some tape for the draft, and it's a shame that Benjamin Morse is not going to be available for you guys, and what a big blow that is. But I'm interested in what you think of potentially with the matchup with Xavier Watts and then Tyler Warren at Penn State, the very talented tight end. Is that something that's going to have to be, you know, for Notre Dame to have some success tonight, they're going to have to be able to take care of Warren, the very talented tight end there at Penn State?
Yeah, I think there's probably going to be two sets of eyes on him at all time. I'll be curious matchup-wise. You know, Xavier Watts has been at his best when he's patrolling center field. He's such a good eraser of big plays back there, and I wonder if they're going to want to take him out of that role. Mm-hmm. You know, Notre Dame plays more man coverage than anybody, but right. Does that job go to a Don Shuler? Does Jordan Clark, who's been the nickelback for them, come in because Tyler Warren is such a prolific pass threat? Does Jack Kaiser moonlight there? I think the honest answer is you're going to throw a little bit of everything at him, much like we talked about with the pass rushers. You don't want a pass catcher to feel like he's got a handle on who he's going up against. You want constant fresh bodies to eliminate the chief threat in that offense, and there's no doubt it's Tyler Warren. I'm sure we'll get some great-on-great matchups of him and Xavier Watts, but I do think it's going to be a by-committee approach there for Al Golden's defense.
It's Mike Golic Jr. here with you on your home of the Cowboys. Are you expecting a defensive grinded-out type of game? How many points is it going to take to win it this evening?
Yeah, I don't think many. I mean, I'd be surprised if we're dealing in the mid-20s here in points. I think this is a high-teens, low-20s game. I think the under at DraftKings right now is 45.5, and I think much like the Georgia game, we are careening towards the under in this one. You know, Penn State's offense has been good in the big plays when it comes to, you know, what they do in the run game for that. Keetron Allen, Nick Singleton, 2,000-yard backs, two incredibly explosive backs, but their passing game, kind of like Notre Dame's, has struggled to get anything going deep downfield all that consistently outside of Tyler Warren. So I don't see that changing. This Notre Dame secondary has been great. Leonard Moore stepped in really well for Benjamin Morrison and created a really nice young tandem in that secondary. So I think overall this is going to be a game where it's going to be one in the margins. It's going to be which defense can give their offense an extra possession somewhere along the way. And so I've been saying 2017 Notre Dame all day. That feels kind of like the right score here. I don't think either of these teams is going to be able to pull too far away from the other at this point.
How's the action been against the spread? Do we know who the sharps prefer?
I haven't seen much info on that yet. Was going to check as we got closer to game time just to kind of gauge that, especially for the show tomorrow. But, you know, the way we've seen the line fluctuate, Notre Dame at times was nearing a 2.5-point favorite, almost a 3-point favorite. It's come back down to like that original 1.5-point line. And so it seems pretty evenly split on both sides. I know we had those rumors for a little while about the Notre Dame team having the flu that I think have since been squashed. So thankfully we should get a full good-on-good, strength-on-strength matchup between two teams. You know, Notre Dame against Georgia, it was unfortunate. Carson Beck wasn't out there. You couldn't get that best-on-best game. But here you're going to get it. And listen, who's got more to play for right now, it seems, than Drew Aller on the other side, who after their first couple of games, all of a sudden NFL scouts start talking and saying, hey, maybe if this guy gets hot, it's a weaker quarterback class. He's incredibly gifted. Maybe he comes out all of a sudden and garners a little bit more attention. So I do think both of these sides pretty evenly matched, and I'm sure the numbers will reflect that.
Well, damn it, Gojo. I think we got ball sacked on that flu bug as well with the Fightin' Irish. So thank you for that clarification. Yep, that's how that internet goes these days. What do you think about the Horns and the Buckeyes tomorrow? And I did see some odds. Notre Dame, the favorites, if Quinn Ewers goes into the portal.
Yeah, you know, that'll be interesting. Marcus Freeman came out earlier in the year and said they weren't going to be dipping into the transfer market again. Maybe a different opportunity presents itself and those things change, you know. They were excited about C.J. Carr on that roster, I know, who dealt with an elbow injury behind the scenes this year. That, you know, I'm not breaking any news there. That's well documented. I just mean the fact that his status for game day wasn't in question because he wasn't in playing. But I think for Texas and Ohio State, Texas is the one team talent-wise on the roster that I think if they play their best day, is best situated to go toe-to-toe with Ohio State. Problem is we haven't seen that in a while. Quinn Ewers has been dealing with some injuries the back half of the season that have been well documented. The offensive line, which sounds like it's going to be a little healthier going into this game, has struggled to kind of get a consistent ground game going in this postseason run. And so to do that against an Ohio State team that just has it firing on all cylinders right now since they got their O-line sorted out after all the injuries, and now that group has had time to gel together, I think if they're playing their best football, Ohio State's going to be damn near impossible to stop, as we've seen.
Hey, Mike, you mentioned the offense and defensive lines, but I was curious about in the secondary, the challenges that the Texas secondary is going to have with this Ohio State receiving core.
Yeah, there's just too many good options. I mean, Jeremiah Smith, you know, there's like the point in every season, I remember our coaches would always say, you're like 7-8 games in, and the freshmen that have been playing at that point, they're like, you guys aren't freshmen anymore. Right. We expect you to go out here and get the job done because you've got the reps and experience. And Jeremiah Smith, you saw the confidence in him leading into the playoffs of a guy that had all those reps under his belt and now felt like he was seeing the game much better. And that shows. So when you've got one of the most unique mismatches in the sport on your side, and then Emeka Egbuka, and then on and on down the list, Carnell Tate and all these guys that you've got as options, and then the running backs coming out of the backfield, it's like a game of whack-a-mole that you seemingly can't win if you can't get to the quarterback and if Will Howard's not going to make mistakes and turn the ball over the way he hasn't through these first couple of games. And so it's, you know, the full totality of that $20 million worth of player that we heard about them buying this offseason. That talent's finally had a chance to show up because the foundation's been so secure. And that's before we talk about the defense that's been playing like the best unit in the sport right now.
Gojo, how do you take in a big Notre Dame game like tonight? Will you be sports barring it, or do you lock yourself alone in a room and scream at your television? How do you go about this?
I am the latter. I am not fit for public consumption during Notre Dame games. I am the worst version of myself. I turn into a gremlin. I hate myself during Notre Dame games and what I put my family and loved ones through. So I try and be around as few people as possible because there are very few people that have the clearance level to be around and tolerate me during this game and still love me when they see me the next day.
Oh, that is
man,
amazing.
I think if you live streamed it, you're looking at a million at least.
Easy.
I'm probably looking at not having a job come Monday of my life. So this is self-preservation.
Do you go full Homer or highly critical or a little of both? Just give us a window into that.
Yeah, I would say highly critical. I ride the roller coaster, man, because I always tell people I was a fan before I was a football player at Notre Dame, and now I'm a fan after I was done playing. And that fan brain, as we know, highly irrational. And so I am riding the roller coaster here. I am incredibly Jessica Smetana over at the Dan Le Batard Show, who's a great job as their producer there and is on air all the time. Me and her have a text thread going during these games where our worst reactions go in there. our deepest, saddest thoughts and all the things that we don't want to tweet all go in there. So it's important to have that relationship in your life with a friend where you can go and you can both commiserate together and not lose your jobs in the process.
Gojo, don't want to put you in a bad spot here, but we did have an awesome moment last year with you and Zach Martin. We got to have Zach Martin on our show as our weekly player guest, and there's some rumors this might be it, and certainly not the way we wanted to see Zach Martin go out with the injury there. I don't know if you've had a chance to talk about him, but do you think he does give it another run? And if not, I mean, if you want to just reflect on him and what an amazing career it's been.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what the decision process will be like for Zach right now. You know, he's an incredible competitor and a guy that I'm sure wanted to see it out and bring a championship to Dallas as a part of this team since he got there, where he's been one of the faces of this franchise here. If it is the end, and again, I know nothing about the decision. I don't have any insight here other than if it is the end here, I mean, one of the two or three greatest interior offensive linemen I've seen in my lifetime, probably one of the three, you know, at least on the Mount Rushmore of offensive guards and interior offensive linemen in the league's history, just banner of consistency, really his entire time. He's an unreal teammate. He is one of the guys to his core, despite the fact that he's been such an exemplary player and for so many people that look up to him and use him as, you know, this archetype of what it's supposed to be like. When you're playing offensive line, it's be seen, not heard. It's be so efficient that people don't even notice you. And Zach somehow got noticed for that. He was that good at it for so long. So he's an incredibly balanced, incredibly smart, disciplined player who showed up for his teammates, who battled through injury for this team, and is going to look great in that gold jacket 5 years to the day from whenever he does decide to hang it up. So one of my favorite teammates, I mean, the best football player I have ever played with or against is hands down Zach Martin. And so it'll be a sad day for football when that guy's gone, because getting to watch him go out there and strap it up, the warrior that he was always a ton of fun, and playing with him was an honor and something I'll get to tell my kids about one day when you show, you know, show highlights of him from back in the day, road grading people on the field for the Cowboys.
So if things go your way tonight for you and Zach and everybody with Notre Dame, will you be pulling for Texas hard tomorrow, thinking Ohio State's just too much?
I think, Texas, again, if they beat Ohio State, they're going to pull out some wild stuff, and that would be a certain challenge there. But, yeah, at this point, if I'm gaming this out for the best possible outcome, people always say if you want to beat the best. No. I want the best possibility of winning. I didn't want to play Alabama in 2012. I knew what they were capable of. I wish we were playing Kansas State in that game. So, yeah, I would say Texas is probably the lesser of two evils, even knowing full well that's a very good football team, and Notre Dame would have a long day with either one of them.
And if it's Ohio State, can you get up to believe in that one, or would you just think, man, it's great we made the title game?
You know, I think you can find a path to victory there. And listen, we know Ohio State, even with this great roster, is capable of putting out a clunker there. It would probably take them playing a little bit less than their best day. But at this point, I have learned not to doubt the power of Al Golden and that Notre Dame defense especially. Those guys have been up to the challenge every step of the way. The offense has taken their cues from them and responded accordingly. So I can drink enough Kool-Aid to figure out and find a path to victory almost anywhere. I'm sure I'd do it again if they find their way to Atlanta.
I love it, man. I hope you have the best time. Thank you so much for your insights.
Thanks, guys. Always fun.
Mike Golic Jr., DraftKings with you here on your home of the Cowboys, 105 through the Fan. Defense wins championship, boys. All four of these teams' top 10 defensive outfits.
Yeah.
But Ohio State may be the best amongst those. All righty. Gotta run. Cowboys Twitter. Speculation on who could be the next Cowboys coach if it's not Mike. And data that the running game might be key for a Cowboys return to the postseason. That's coming up next here. It's the G-Bag Nation on 105 through the Fan. Here we go. Welcome back, Nation. Let's hit some Cowboys Twitter. Top tweets going viral. We just spoke with former Notre Dame offensive lineman, teammate of Zach Martin. Mike Golic Jr. with us there at the top of the hour. If you want to go back and listen to a hell of an interview about tonight's Notre Dame-Penn State game and everything going on with football, just hit the instant rewind functionality with your Odyssey app, 105.3thefan.com, Twitch, or YouTube. Cowboys Twitter right here. What do you think about this stat about what kind of teams made the playoffs for the first time in NFL history? We're going to discuss this and how the Cowboys optimized their attempt to get back. Segments brought brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. Life's unpredictable. Accidents happen. If you or a loved one is injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels. Get a free consultation. 214 or 817-333-3333. Hit frankelfirm.com. We're getting some pretty good snow here in Sunnyvale, just east of Mesquite here in the southern area of DFW. So it's nice to participate a little bit. Maybe I did make the right decision staying home to stay out of this weather. And salute to you for making us part of your day and staying safe and warm out there, if that is what you're doing as well. We go to the Twitter account, guys, of Doug Clawson. I'm sure many of you saw this on Cowboys Twitter already today. He's got the top six teams in rush yards all made the playoffs for the first time in NFL history, that being Baltimore, Philadelphia, Washington, Green Bay, Tampa Bay, and Detroit. So almost half the playoff teams, the top six rushing teams in the league. That's not just a coincidence, is it? You know, I think the league has made it a point to stop the big plays in the passing game, and maybe the pendulum swung a little bit too far, creating a hell of an opportunity if you have, you know, what it takes to run the ball. It was a pretty big advantage, you know. So that's what happened. I think the key now is, you know, figuring out, is that going to continue to be the case for the foreseeable future? What do you guys think about this story?
Yeah, you know, if you look at Buffalo is on a heck of a streak right now for not allowing a pass of over 20 yards, air yards, like 40 straight games that they've been on. And I think the Packers
20 are, air yards?
Yeah, 20 plus air yards, yeah. And they've been on quite a streak. I think it's 40 games. I think I saw that. And I think the Packers are second when it comes to that. So it's a pretty significant thing considering how teams make big plays in the passing game nowadays. So, yeah, these teams are having to try and kind of figure out other ways to move the football, and, you know, maybe for some of these – you know, I think this goes back to the offensive lines getting bigger. Maybe your defensive lines being smaller, and people are kind of like going to that. That's just a little bit of an easier way for them to get some yards and then kind of get their passing game going once they're staying ahead of the chains.
That's a good point. You know, yeah, go for it, Gavin.
No, Zach, go ahead.
I mean, it's all about getting to the passer, right? So if the trend's going to go one side where now everything's pass heavy, as a defense, I'm now building to stop the pass, and I want to be able to get guys that are quick and can affect the quarterback, and that I'm going to go ahead and counter that with, let me run the football on you, right? We've talked about lighter boxes, smaller defensive players, but I think, like, it did kind of swing too far one direction with the running backs. Like, even if you look at the Super Bowls, Isaiah Pacheco's been very important for the Chiefs in being able to run the ball. Damien Williams was very important in their first Super Bowl for the Chiefs. Leonard Fournette with Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Like, I understand maybe, you know, the amount of money you're paying, etc., all that fine. But being able to run the football, and if you are a good running team, that is going to equate to wins. That will never change, ever, in football, at any level. If you can run the football and you can play defense, you will be a successful football team. So it's not surprising. And then also for Josh Allen, James Cook, right? He's been fantastic for them. Also probably a big reason his turnover numbers are down, and he's had the best season of his career.
For those teams that are really poor defending the run, good news is this draft has got a lot of big body one technique dudes.
Sure does.
So if you want to swing this thing back to playing some run defense with some bigger bodies, this is a good draft for you.
Yeah, that's been one of the trends, is a big body one technique that can eat up space and allow your two safeties to be back and your linebackers to play coverage a little bit more. And last year, it created a trend where we were holding teams, you know, below the previous year's yard per attempt, and also cutting out the big plays. But this is the first time it has, you know, swung back in such a productive way here for the running game. And I don't know, is investing in running back stronger a significant key in this, or is it all, you know, coming back to the offensive line and the offense? And I also want to say, you still have to be able to create chunk plays in the passing game. You can't build the running game at the detriment of the passing game. It's got to be, you know, very much a complimentary. But a lot of these teams did invest significantly, Chief, in the running back position. I think maybe Tampa with White and Irving, fifth and third rounders, is the smallest investment you would get from one of these six teams. How do you react to the story?
Yeah, I think the Chiefs are another team, obviously, that haven't thrown a bunch of value at the position. But like Pacheco, they're getting a fair amount out of them. The Rams have Kyren Williams. You know, they're not throwing a bunch of money at that position to make it happen. But McVay and just a good scout's eye to know that Kyren Williams on the cheap is going to be a good player for you. The other thing, too, is all the how many quarterbacks in here now are running threats themselves? I mean, between Hurts and Daniels and Jackson and Allen, and then Mahomes has had one of the most efficient scrambling seasons of, you know, really in NFL history, with the way he's just consistently stealing first downs with his legs constantly. So the threat of that opens things up for, you know, opens stuff up for the backs as well. And of course, those quarterbacks, I mean, Jaden Daniels and Lamar Jackson, of course, and I mean, those guys are getting a bunch of rushing yards themselves. So, but yes, you need to be well-rounded. You got to be able to run the football. It's just you can usually you can't really find the quarterback later in the draft. You can usually find the running back later in the draft. So that's just something where it's just the value of the drop-off. The drop-off from the first-round running back to the fifth-round running back is nowhere close to the drop-off between the first-round quarterback and the fifth-round quarterback, or the first-round corner and the fifth-round corner, or edge rusher, or whatever. But when you're talking about running back or linebacker, just traditional off-ball linebacker, there's just it's just the difference between the best guy and the middle rounds guy isn't usually that big.
Yeah, the Kansas City did. They got burned by a first round running back.
They did.
Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah.
That was a first round. It was the 32nd pick, but maybe that's something that they thought, okay, we tried and now it didn't work out, so we can go and evaluate others. But you know, they did try. It just didn't work out for them to get they you know, going out and getting a first round back. It didn't play out for them.
So I think the Cowboys, you know, they're in a weird spot because they have players at, you know, key positions with their offensive line that are young and they've put in position. And, you know, the 12th overall pick doesn't give you like a generational Tyron Smith or Zach Martin opportunity that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. So how do you try to make sure the running game is better for Dak Prescott in this offense next year, considering the resources that they have available to him? Is this doable?
Yeah, it's doable when you consider maybe, and I know maybe, you know, Zach can address this as well. If you look at, say, you go out and you get Banks from Texas,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
say that would be the one guy, you know, fortify the offensive line. You know, you could play him at guard. I think that's where he's going to be playing. We're going to talk about this draft a whole lot of these tackles. There's not a lot of consistency where you think, okay, that is a plug and play offensive tackle. There are questions about all these guys at the top of this board, especially in the first round, about whether these guys, you know, have the ability to play tackle. A lot of people think they'll short arm guys, shorter guys, maybe they have to play guard. But to me, if you want to help and you don't want to draft the running back in the first round, then Banks, I think draft him and then play him, plug him as the right guard. I think you help your team that way.
And the best thing you can do if you're an organization and there's no salary cap on coaches, you can just get exhaustive with, go find a great play designer who has a wide repertoire of ways to attack you through, you know, on the ground. And
design runs and stuff.
Have a little
bit more
of a nuanced rushing attack, and that'll help you. That's one place that you could start that'll make everybody better immediately. Your current running backs, your current offensive line, your current quarterback, they can all be helped from the sideline. Unfortunately, the Cowboys don't find the value in the sideline help near as much as they probably should.
And the other frustrating part is, while there is no salary cap, they don't seem very willing to pay that coaching staff to want to do it as well. Yeah. I mean, and the head coach, Mike McCarthy's not getting paid a ton. We're going to have to figure out, okay, what's that salary looking like? But you're also purging a bunch of coaches a couple of years ago. So, yeah, I agree with Brian. Like, a lot of the offensive tackles this year, especially the ones you're going to talk about at 12, like Connor Lee Jr. out of Oregon, super athletic guy, right? I think there's a lot of offensive line coaches that are going to see him and be like, he's got all the traits, I can mold him into a first round-esque offensive tackle. But there's also a lot of like, I don't know, with him there as well. I mean, Simmons is the guy from Ohio State I think I'd be willing to take.
Absolutely.
There
absolutely, but the knee injury, of course, is something
exactly
that, yeah.
But that's, you know, I think that's a path to improvement. You draft Banks, you get better at center in year two with BB, absolutely. You get better with Guyton at left tackle, got a pretty big jump to make there. Or maybe you just stand in there and take Genty and think, dude, if this guy can go 5.2 and attempt his rookie year and we can play better defense, maybe we can find ourselves back atop the division. There's multiple ways to try to let that play out. But I think, you know, taking Banks at 12, plugging him at right guard, and then finding your running back on day two or day three, maybe to compliment Rico. You know, I like, you know, what some of these teams were able to do with putting together like a veteran along with a young guy. You know, I think the Packers probably spent too much on Josh Jacobs, but they got Emmanuel Wilson, who ran it 100 times for 4.9 an attempt, undrafted. You know, the Lions get Montgomery 3-18. Along with Gibbs, you know, very manageable salary that maybe Rico could be, you know, in line for along with the rookie. That'd be fun. But I also think Chief made a good point that when your quarterback is willing to run, a lot of different guys can be highly productive. The Ravens just go get Derrick Henry and push it over the top. But, I mean, a lot of other dudes were having really good running back years along with Lamar Jackson there in the backfield. Okay, Krusty's Corners coming up next. Brian, where are you taking us?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a thought from each one of these playoff games that you need to keep an eye on. We'll do that next.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Lucius. Let's fly away to some Krusty's Corner. Here's the king himself, Brian.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Guys, just taking a look out the window. Looks like we got a little bit more traffic out there, believe it or not. You know, going 75 on south, going south on 75 and actually coming north. So people are making their ways out there. Just everybody be safe out there if you're out there driving around, though. And again, happy my teammates are all doing well in their homes and stuff like that. So happy for you guys.
I'm sure you are.
I am happy.
I can detect that sounded, a little bit of resentment in your voice.
There was sarcasm, right?
Not at all. No, seriously. I'm happy. I'm seriously happy that you guys are safe. Like I said, this is not cool out here right now, you know.
I love driving in it though.
I know it's
fun to drive in if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I live close, so I'm serious. I'm being, because I know there's some people out there like, oh no, they're all apart and all that. No, I don't. I'm happy. People are okay.
The visibility is low though. That's for sure. Yeah. You're slipping and sliding.
Yeah, yeah, that is true. That is true out there, but like I said,
I'm just looking at 7 o'clock when, you know, likely it's going to get colder and maybe turn to real snow.
Yeah,
you know, I like to know with 100% conviction.
Totally. I am.
Come on, bro.
I am totally.
Hey, at least it's not ice out there either, right?
No,
it's just slushy, it's not snow.
It's slushy.
It's not ice.
No, it's fine. I mean, I'm serious. I'm not, because I know there's people that they're like at the station are probably like going, whoa. Well, they're not working. You know, I'm like, no, man. I'm happy my guys are safe. I really am. I'm happy my guys are doing well. I really am.
I'm just saying.
I'm a bad driver, so I don't want to be out there in this.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
Self-aware.
All right, here we go. I went on my next gen stuff, and they've got these playoffs broken down for you pretty well.
Ooh,
with all the stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try and come up with a little bit of like one thought, something that might kind of maybe change the game or something we need to keep an eye on as we look at these football games. And I'll start with the Los Angeles Chargers at the Houston Texans. And this one you kind of need to keep an eye on. It's called tackling struggles. And this is, the Texans have missed 15% of their tackle opportunities this season.
Wow.
This is the fourth highest in the National Football League. And then they have allowed the 10th most yards per missed tackle.
Oof.
So every time they miss a tackle, it's 6 yards. So the matchup here then is, since returning from injury, J.K. Dobbins, the running back for the Chargers, he's forced 14 missed tackles on 41 touches. It's tied for the second most missed tackles forced during that two-game span. So Texans will need to find a way to tackle better. Is that something you feel like that you can get better if you've been bad all year? Is that something you feel like, guys, you can get better at
No,
in one
I mean,
playoff
if you
game?
A,
If you have a soft player, I think maybe he could be challenged in the playoffs to, you know, actually man up. But, yeah. You know, I think the majority of guys are flying at 100%. They're just not good at timing it and staying in position.
I can think of one team maybe in playoff history of my, like, recollection that all of a sudden flipped a switch and was a completely different run-defending team, and that was the Colts. And it was because they got Bob Sanders back, right?
Bob Sanders, baby.
Yeah, there you go.
So, I mean, I don't know if there's a Bob Sanders walking through that door for Houston, but that sounds pretty damning. And also, I mean, probably a big reason why you've seen regression from last year to this year. I mean, DeMeco Ryans had that unit very, very good tackling team overall. So that's one that's surprising, and they're probably missing Jalen Petrie as well.
Okay, now the second game I want to talk about here is the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Baltimore Ravens. This is what they say the matchup to watch is. Can Lamar scramble past the Steeler defense? We've talked about that a bunch, how quarterbacks in the playoffs, you know, their ability to run, will be the difference in these games. Lamar Jackson scrambled to run on just 9% of his dropbacks this season, which, despite being the fourth highest rate in the NFL, this was the second lowest rate of his career.
Wow.
So Jackson totaled 446 yards and a touchdown on 48 scramble runs this season. It's an average of 9.3 yards per carry. That's the fifth most in the league. Jackson also generated 159 rushing yards over expected on such carries in 2024. That's the most in NFL in the last two seasons. Here's the matchup. The Steelers have allowed opposing quarterbacks to get past the line of scrimmage on scrambles just 14 times this season. The fewest in the NFL. The Steelers have allowed 63 yards and a touchdown on such runs for a league-low 4.5 per scramble run. Across his two matchups against the Steelers this season, Jackson scrambled to run just once, totaling 8 yards. Is this going to be something that's not going to be a factor in this game? Is Lamar Jackson's ability, and will that hurt them, the fact that they're banged up at wide receiver and maybe they need Jackson to run?
I would think so, you know, and in his games passing, I mean, they lost the one in November, and just the one before Christmas, he had 207 yards passing to go with 22 yards. So, you know, I think the way that they defend Lamar Jackson is key, but I just look at divisional familiarity as a reason that we should not be surprised by an upset.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that was the second win Lamar's ever had against Pittsburgh. So we had the Nugget where he was like 1-5, and then they finally won that game. So certainly Mike Tomlin's done a good job against him. Without Zay Flowers, this is going to be a tough task. They're probably going to need to look for more out of Isaiah Likely, their tight end, I would assume. I mean, Mark Andrews has kind of gotten a little bit better the second half of the season. The touchdown numbers came back up. But somebody else is going to have to step up. Like, is it Rashad Bateman? Who else are you looking at? But no Zay Flowers. That's their big play threat in the offense.
Yeah, I think Lamar Jackson's going to be ready to put the Superman cape on for sure. And here's the deal. He's probably only going to need 14 points to win this game. Like, the Ravens defense has taken a turn for the much better, and on the other side of the coin, the Steelers have bottomed out offensively. Like, even if Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense struggles, just score 16 points, I think that wins you the football game.
I think this is going to be interesting because I think you're right about this, Chief, about the Pittsburgh Steelers' inability to. It sounds like to me that listening to their coordinator talk that he really doesn't want to be playing with Russ right now.
He wants Fields.
He feels like that Fields would be better off for them going forward than playing with Russ. So be interesting to see if there's some type of a short leash here on this one.
Or even just some Fields packages to run the football.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. The last one I'm going to do today, and then I'm going to save the other three games for tomorrow for Friday's show, if it would. But I'm going to talk about the Denver Broncos and the Buffalo Bills here. And this one is, the heading is under attack. And Bo Nix has targeted receivers behind the line of scrimmage on 26% of his total attempts this season. That's the third highest rate in the NFL, throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage. He threw for 743 yards. That was the fourth most. and 7 touchdowns, which was the most such passes, the most touchdowns without an interception in the NFL. Here's the matchup. The Bills recorded a league-high 4 interceptions on passes targeted behind the line of scrimmage this season. That's twice as many as any other defense in the league. Wow. If does Sean Payton need to rethink this, or is this just who the Denver Broncos are, and they're going to throw the ball behind the line of scrimmage and they're going to let their guys make plays? Or is Sean Payton going to have to be a little bit concerned the fact that the Bills seem to be do a very good job of not allowing you to throw the ball at or behind the line of scrimmage?
I think this is who they are. I mean, this is who Bo Nix was at Oregon last year. It was part of the knock on him. It was like he's playing sort of in a 5-yard box. And fortunately for Sean Payton, he can dial it up that way, and they got a couple of players that they can live that way. I think by and large, Sean McDermott and his defenses are always about just not giving up the big play. They'll give you the underneath stuff. And so maybe not to the same extent with specifically at the line of scrimmage, but I did see like Buffalo's allowed 50% of the passes within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage to result in successful plays for the offense. I still think just the dink and dunk style of Bo Nix is probably something that will be effective here.
I think Marvin Mims is a guy that certainly has opened this offense up a little bit. Yeah. Marvin Mims is a deep threat for them that Bo Nix has started to find. If they're going to win this football game, they're going to need some chunk plays with those two.
Yeah, but I think, you know, just running it conservatively and, you know, and short passes and run a game and maybe some Sean Payton play action over the top, taking your shots that way. I would be thinking what we have to do is limit the Bills' big plays and contain Josh Allen and try to keep this game in the 20s. We don't need to be coming out here thinking we need to worry about, you know, depth of target and pushing the ball downfield, because there's a path to victory here if we can run the football and play defense against, you know, Buffalo. And they have a number of quality runners there in Denver, including the quarterback. So I'd be looking to play it very conservatively, which would probably involve more passes behind the line of scrimmage.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. We'll talk about the other games tomorrow.
Looking forward to it. Thank you for those nuggets from Brian Broaddus. He is at Brian Broaddus on X, the Super Bowl winning scout, the former Cowboys and Eagles scout as well, and Krusty's Corner every afternoon, 3:40 here in the Nation. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic talking college football with you coming up at 4:20. Chief, I hope you saw the note, because we're pivoting to a sports hodgepodge coming up next.
Yes, among other things, I have the wild details on how these athletes' homes keep getting burglarized next to the Nation.